everyone, and welcome to episode one of The Way We Nerd. My name is Daniel Villalobos. To my right is...
Oh, Kyle Bound.
Directly.
It's not a test.
That's how directions work.
Josh Moorhead.
Diagonally from me, directly across from me.
Joshua Potter.
There you go. All right, so that was about as informal introduction as you can get, Mr. Bound. Thanks for breaking that.
Anytime. I wanted to get us there. Off on the wrong foot.
The wrong foot. That's all right. That's all right. Isn't that the line from Austin Powers? It's like, get off on the wrong foot and do the bad thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the audience doesn't feel intimidated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We make mistakes, too.
We make a lot of mistakes. We're not that professional at what we do. Anyway, so this podcast is basically, as you see, The Way We Nerd. It's everything nerdy, you know, whether it be movies, television shows, video games, comic books, toys, anything you can think of. The fact that Playboy is now no longer fully nude, which is big news to me, but, you know, like one of my colleagues said, why would you need Playboy when there's the internet? Anyway, I like the articles. So we're going to move on to some nerd news. It's kind of quiet right now, being that it's the end of the summer season. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I get as just excited for award season as I do for summer season. Like,
sure.
We got some great movies coming out. Like, Black Mass is already great. Sicario. The Martian, from what I understand, is great. Sicario was amazing.
Yeah. It still hasn't left me.
Steve Jobs is coming out soon, or is it out already?
I think it's limited release.
It's out at Hollywood Arclight in like a theater in New York.
Okay, that's it. Okay, yeah. I got to see Jobs. Steve Jobs.
It's four screens.
Four screens. Yeah. Okay,
150,000 like per screen.
Yeah.
But The Revenant. Have you guys seen the previous trailers for that? Mm-hmm. Wow. So
it's another Tom Hardy mumbles movie. Everything he says in the trailer.
That's pretty much Bane, dude. He's pretty much going to be Bane for the rest of his career.
This is like Sling Bane, though.
Sling Bane.
He's like... Anyway. His award chances.
Well done.
You know what? I was totally going to do a Bane in Sling Blade voice there line, but the only line I can remember from Sling Blade is kind of not PC anymore, so... I'll just do the beginning of it. Not funny, haha, funny.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, so we're going to be PC around here. We'll keep that joke out of there, but Sling Blade is an awesome movie. But anyway, award season coming up. Is there any movie, Kyle, that you are particularly looking forward to this coming December? I'm sorry.
Besides Star Wars,
I'm sorry, not December.
That's what the Bantha in the
my
room.
Bad.
Look, we were going to get to that. That's the funny thing is, but obviously December is on my mind. I didn't mean December. Yes. I just meant this holiday
awards
movie
wise.
Season. Besides the big one up in the galaxy far, far away.
You know, I would have to say Jobs. Like, that's the one I really want to see. You already mentioned it. That's the one I'm really interested in.
Yeah.
Seeing how that goes.
Looks like Kate Winslet's going to win another Oscar from what it sounds like.
I mean, if she doesn't, Meryl Streep has to. It's one of them.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the other one. Suffragette, right? That's another award.
Yeah.
Award.
A movie no one will see, but four people will get nominated for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Everybody will pretend to have seen
right.
it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's an important issue. No, I was watching pornography.
I was watching Star Wars for the 17th time.
God knows I will.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, how about you, Josh? Is anyone you go?
The Revenant actually looks crazy good. I think it's going to be too crazy for awards, like real awards consideration.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like...
So Leo's still not going to get his...
I think Leo might win, but I don't think it's going to be like... I think it's going to be so out there that it's not going to be like best picture, best screenplay, maybe best cinematography, something like that. I actually can't think of like what are supposed to be the big awards.
There's not
a clear favorite right now.
No, which is good, actually.
And even... The Spielberg we have coming this Friday.
Oh, Bridge of Spies.
That's not like a given.
It's not. Yeah. It's not. And the thing is, they just released the odds on the Oscars, actually. Let me see if I can find that real quick. But while I'm looking for that, Potter, how about you, man? Like, you are even any that have already, you know, been out this year that'll be like a sleeper Oscar? Do you have any you can think of that you've seen in the past year?
None that I've seen that come to mind.
See the Martian.
That is on the list.
I give that all of my awards.
For sure.
Until Star Wars.
I don't know. I'm very interested in The Hateful Eight when that comes out. Especially the 70mm version.
Yes.
I'm a sucker for 70mm. It's fantastic. It's a good throwback. It's
I wonder how that delightful. Works awards-wise.
Yeah.
Since there's two versions. Because there's two versions. So he's got the normal version coming out that's sort of your you go to the movie theater, you see it. Then there's a 70mm version, which is like 6 minutes longer, but he also is reworking some scenes so that instead of sort of cutting into scenes and cutting around the room, it's longer takes.
Oh.
It's sort of a single camera shot. Weird. So, yeah, I don't know. I imagine that that's sort of the version that could get like a Best Picture nomination or something. But, yes.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that would be considered differently than the theatrical normal version.
I don't know if Sicario will hold on to awards season, but it was so great.
I agree, so man. Great. Like I can't see that. I mean, I think the writer and director definitely should be nominated. Denis Villeneuve. And I wish I knew the writer's name. I it's on the tip of my tongue. I should look it up. But because the character that they created with Benicio, I mean, you know, the only one that can come to mind in recent years is the No Country for Old Men, Javier Bardem's character. Yeah, it's just like you're rooting for this guy, even though you know he is a bad, bad person. And I don't want to say that completely about Benicio because I don't want to give away too much about that movie.
Well, I was gonna say even saying that kind of gives away, but.
Well, but because the thing is, because
they play the whole thing plays with morality so much, and we discussed after we saw it, how we felt bad because I had talked to so many people that were like, I just felt so dirty and wrong afterwards. Whereas I left like, well, that was fucking awesome. Like, so I wondered like if I have moral issues.
Well, it is, and that's what and that brings up a good point. Like maybe I did give something away there, but at the same time. That's what I'm saying, that the character No Country for Old Men is a bad, bad man. But with Benicio's character, and this is why I think it's better.
You can side with him.
I don't...
You can't side at all with No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You can root for him, and then... But, like, everything Emily Blunt goes through, it's just... Oh, Sicario was like... Because it's so relevant to everything that our government is doing and that people are upset about. But it's stuff that I think needs to be done. And the greatest thing about this movie is it doesn't really... It doesn't really give you one side or the other.
Right.
It kind of gives you both and says, hey, it's up to you what you think is necessary. Like, that's what I like about it. It's not too preachy, but it's also not, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Outside of Star Wars and outside of possible Oscar consideration, it's time to start getting excited for Spectre.
Spectre is at the end of the month.
Yep. And the rumblings we're hearing now is Mr. Craig is done after... But he's apparently contractually...
he has at least one more under contract. Apparently that was sarcasm. How could you read that? He said somebody asked him, "Do you want to play Bond again?" He's like, "I'd rather slip my wrist."
Yes.
And I'm like, how can you? Who like you have to read that as sarcasm?
You have to the way he said. And he also, if you listen to the rest of the thing, all he was saying was like, "I just can't do it right now. Like it takes so much of my time.
Right.
If we're gonna do it, like I couldn't do it when they asked me to do it back to back. The funny thing is like, that's what sucks about the way news is reported, even entertainment news. They give you something that's going to be a flashy headline they take from this person's quote, but it's completely taken out of context when you see that. But most people judge it just on that.
Yeah.
Even if the article does go through and tell you everything he said, which most of them do.
Yeah, you know, but the headline's all most people see.
Exactly. And that's what people, like the thing about Anthony Daniels complaining about Abrams' Star Wars. Like, I don't know if you guys heard about that.
No.
Anthony Daniels, like, said some stuff. Like, he hated the fact that it needed to be all secretive.
Did see that.
And then he's like, the movie isn't that important and stuff like that. But people interpreted that as him saying the movie sucked.
No.
That's all what I remember. It's a very different
thing. It is.
But all I remember from that interview, which I thought was hilarious because he's obviously not under George Lucas's clutches anymore, was that he was like, those prequel movies blew ass. Like, C-3PO said that. He was like,
I mean, look, and if anybody knows terrible. About blowing ass,
yeah. Yeah, totally. He's fluent. All dialects.
That is one of the 6 million forms of communication with which he is familiar.
There was one really big piece of geek news, and I don't know if I'm carrying us.
No, I think we're. I just looked at all the Oscar movies coming up, and the only one that we didn't really talk about that. What the hell is The Room?
Oh, The Room looks good.
Everybody, yeah. I keep
saying that. Well, it's not The Room. It's just The Room. Because The Room is a whole different...
It's Brie Larson, right?
The Room is that...
Yeah. It's Brie Larson and her... Right. The Room is Tommy Wiseau's apparently worst movie ever. I haven't seen it. I need to see it.
Bye, doggy.
But Room is Brie Larson and her son. And I believe she gives birth to her son like while she's after she's been kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And she's locked in this room for years and years. And her son, all her son has ever known is The Room.
Yeah,
I know what this is.
And as far as like her son's concerned, that's the extent of the world.
Like to save him for years and years, she shields from him that there's anything else.
Yeah.
And I don't know how she explains the man that comes to them and gives them a plate of food every day. But she's probably like, that's Santa.
Sure.
Like, I don't know, but that's what
And then the kid gets out, finds somebody, they escape, and it's sort of them. It seems like it's them reintegrating into the world. Okay. I'm not sure exactly where the story goes from there, but it looks good. The trailer looks great.
I have seen, now that you mentioned that, I have seen the trailer. I just didn't realize that was the title of the movie. But I have been hearing a lot of people saying, I'm gonna go see Room. And I'm like, okay, what's Room?
Apparently the kid's amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely something I want to see. Like, it sounds like it's probably hard to watch in the beginning, but it sounds like it ends okay at least. Well,
maybe, I don't know.
We don't know actually. Really,
maybe the guy comes back and kills them. Who knows?
Oh, let's hope.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. What do you guys think about Crimson Peak?
Oh,
Crimson Peak looks pretty good. I'm interested.
I'm a big Guillermo del Toro fan. Yes. So.
Yeah.
Even though I was slightly disappointed in Pacific Rim, although when I watched it again, I was like, actually, this movie's pretty fun. But Crimson Peak, like him returning to horror and having Mia Wachowski and Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston's going to be fantastic.
I'm so excited. Super fun. Is it Perlman in this one, too?
I mean, he's got to be, I assume.
Been like every other one.
What's interesting is I heard that Universal is holding the reviews and everything, because it's not actually so much a horror movie as it is like a very like moody,
it looks like a ghost story,
like it's a love story, but it's all very like baroque or
like an inverted fairy tale kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's what it seems,
because
like.
It's like, it's not, because
there's those the trailers of, are like, this is the horror movie, snow and the blood, but,
yeah,
and,
like, yeah, but it's more like a mood piece.
Okay. This is kind of Warner Brothers' fault then, if they're marketing in that way and now they're...
Well, you gotta market it as a horror.
You gotta get people to show up.
Yeah. But once you get in there, I feel like normal audiences are going to be like, well, what the hell? But like, will, like the people that are like film nerds and gear nerds will be like, oh, that was so great. The nerd news I want to say, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but Hulk's going to be in Thor Ragnarok.
I heard rumblings of that. But they also said he was going to be in Civil War and what was the other one? He was going to be in, not Ant-Man, he was going to be in another one. He was going to be in Civil War.
No, fans kept asking James Gunn if he was going to be in Guardians.
Guardians, that was fan started.
And then there was a version of the script where he was going to be in Civil War for a minute, but then Kevin Feige or however you say his name was like, no, that's like a waste of...
Yeah, because I think it was more of a cameo, and it was like, nah, we need to delve into this.
The rumor dropped like a day or two ago that he was in Ragnarok, and Marvel has not done anything to refute it. In fact, they tweeted out like an image of Hulk punching Thor.
Interesting.
So I think that's like their like subtle confirmation. Dude, it's such a brilliant move because Thor has the least like buzz. You throw Hulk in there and you put him in the middle of a Norse apocalypse.
I have always loved this idea. Like Kyle had this idea a few years back, or very recently, that they need to do with Marvel what they're doing with Star Wars, where they have like little stories in the middle, like a road trip movie with Tony Stark and Bruce Banner. That would be, I mean, you can have one huge action sequence in there, but then the rest of the movie can just be somewhat of a buddy comedy.
The rest of the movie's planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yes, well, exactly. Makes you wonder,
that would be awesome to see.
Maybe that's what, because we would have talked about this if I saw you guys like last week, but like, the announcement of Ant-Man 2, which is Ant-Man and the Wasp. It makes you
wonder. I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. Cool. That's official for July 20, whatever.
Oh, so Wasp 18. Is officially, okay.
Yeah. But since they were kind of like flirtatious, it makes you wonder like if that will be like the Marvel like
rom-com.
Romantic
comedy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I love that idea. I don't know. What do you think, Bart?
I think it's smart because everybody's calling for a Planet Hulk movie. That's what everybody wants.
Right.
All the fans are clamoring for it. That's why there was all of the rumors and things that he was going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 to set it up for a potential Planet Hulk movie. And, you know, that would be great, and I think everybody would love to see that. But at the same time, I'm not sure if that's the smart move for Marvel. I think they want to use their characters smartly, and as far as Hulk's through line right now, the way they have it set it up, I don't think it's time for a Planet Hulk movie yet. So I think it'd be great to see him in Thor, because he's already got that kind of, I guess, comical buddy relationship, or not even buddy relationship, but...
They're kind of like antagonistic.
They are, but in a Thor's friendly way. Thor's kind of the only
one that can stand up to Hulk.
Dude, one of the best scenes in the first Avengers is when they're standing next to each other and Hulk just punches
them. Yeah. It's hilarious. Thing.
It's an awesome moment. Like, I think it would definitely be a mistake to base any of these movies on previous storylines. Like, what they're doing with Civil War... they're loosely basing it on the major series. That's fine, because that's what all these comic book movies do, and the good ones. They take a little bit of a story that's kind of established, and then they kind of make it their own.
They find a way to still surprise
exactly, which is what they do in comic books, too, when different creators come up with different origin stories or just different versions of, like, the death of Gwen Stacy. Like, how many times you can do it? In comic books, infinitely. You can redo these stories infinitely, but in the movies, obviously, you can't do it. So... it's just, if you want to pull a little bit from, but it's much better to, like, make it your own thing. And I would be the first in line to see a love story between the Hulk and Black Widow. Like, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's just like...
yeah, I have no problem with that.
That was one of the best parts of the Avengers sequel. Like, that love story. You know, a monster loving a monster. Like, it was just... it was poetic. And the scenes that they have her, when they show her going through what she was going through, through her training, like... I know people were like, kind of like, I remember one guy like audibly just yelled out, "What?" when the spoilers when they announced that she couldn't have children.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's a fucking big moment. And I understand if you think it's cheesy, keep your mouth shut, because you know what? That is a powerful reason for Black Widow to be who she is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that can be done in comic book science. Okay?
Yeah.
Actually, can come back with real science. What am I talking about?
Yeah, you need to make sure somebody doesn't get
pregnant. Yeah. It can happen in real life, too. So, I don't know.
Oh, look, a womb. Thanks.
I don't know. I just think maybe Steven Spielberg is right as far as the superhero overload for some people, but...
every bubble bursts.
It does.
And it's already, like, I would argue that there's a slight decline already happening.
Probably, but you...
at
but
the same time, this is like...
that. This is a way to keep it fresh.
By the time it's done, it would have been like a 25-year span of cinema, which is longer than like anything else has ever lasted.
Yeah, which is what actually...
like the Western.
Also, what Spielberg said when he clarified his statements.
Yeah, that. I'm just concerned that DC is about to bring just a giant needle in and just
puncturing
the bubble.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I don't know. I
have no idea.
I think Batman versus Superman will be cool, but I think they might fuck up some of the other ones, and then the balloon will...
I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll reserve judgment until these movies all come out. But I just,
absolutely.
I judge now.
I'm still right, very
lump you in with every other fan on the internet that I know.
You know, the thing about it is, and I've said this time and time again, the wonderful thing about the internet and all this stuff, and people like say that Avengers: Age of Ultron is a good example. It was mostly disliked. I'm like, no, it really wasn't. But the haters are always louder so
more
than the lovers. So if you look on all the ratings, Age of Ultron, it has a fresh rating of like 80% with the critics, and I think it's like 70-something with the fans. So you get 75% of the people happy. You know, okay, maybe you didn't do the 90 that you got.
We are living in something of a troll culture now, because it's even...
it is.
Well, it's even reflected in government. You have 40 people in government that decapitated the House of Representatives twice.
Figuratively.
Yeah. So far.
But, I mean, nobody goes home and says at the top of their lungs, I kind of enjoyed that thing.
Right.
Like, you know, it's just, it's not the way people react to
it. And it is way more fun to give a bad review than a good one.
Well, you feel smarter if everybody likes something. And but like, yeah, hey, this is why everybody else is wrong.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really bad. Like, I've never called myself a critic because I always write reviews on my Instagram and I write reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. But they're not real reviews to critique per se. I just like to say what I liked about things, what I liked about these movies, and then I put in there what maybe could have been done different. But I don't say that's – I mean, some movies are absolute crap. I'm not saying that everything is good out there. Yeah. But I think some things like get harshly criticized for maybe one or two little missteps, you know.
Right.
You know, and right.
These projects, the things we talk about especially, exist better outside of the pressure cooker too.
Yeah.
You see something on opening night, there's a lot more pressure on it than when you watch it on Blu-ray 5 months later.
Very true.
So I didn't dislike Ultron at all. But I found myself like this. I watched it on Blu-ray like last week, and the second it was over, I was like ready to watch it again.
Yeah,
there's something with all that pressure off.
I feel you.
It was more enjoyable somehow.
That's how I felt when I came out of it the first time. I felt not disappointed, but I was like, yeah, that was great. It was good, but it wasn't as good as the first one. But then when I saw it the second time around, I was like, I saw a lot more things that I liked, and I was like, oh no, that was really good. Like it's still not as good as the first one, but that's because
the novelty
it's
of the first
hard
one
to
was,
do yeah like yeah. You, it's so hard to Terminator 2 something that it's just like
right
yeah. That's one of the rare sequels. There's a couple of them out there that you can put with Terminator 2, but because someone brought that up the other day when I said, because they called me Villalobos and they called my brother Villalobos a sequel, and I made a joke about the original is always better than the sequel. And one of our teammates said, well, Terminator 2 fans would disagree with you. I was like, okay, well, there's always exceptions to every rule.
Yeah,
but generally the original is better than any sequel.
That's
generally.
That's a good segue, too. Yeah. They also said recently, because they have too much invested in it, that Terminator's not dead and that they're going to do, like, a soft reboot of it again.
God.
It's like,
just stop.
Oh,
okay, No. Hold on. I have to qualify
yeah,
that
please.
No. That no is not lamenting a soft reboot. That no is lamenting that they're not continuing with the story, because I liked Genesis.
I did, too. It was,
I want
it
more
had,
of
it
that.
Had,
it had stuff
had
going
flaws.
For it, for sure.
It had flaws, but
yes,
the story...
Well, that's okay.
The story was solid, and
yes,
it deserved further exploration. I don't know. What did you think of Terminator Genesis? You had
I still
pretty...
haven't seen it.
You haven't seen
I
it.
I still haven't seen it.
The worst
I,
nerd ever.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I just missed it. It was one of those that I heard enough good, I heard enough bad. I was like, I'll see it eventually. I'm waiting till all of the junk dies down before I see it. And I'm sure I will enjoy it because I'm a Terminator fan.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was a little dense.
It was, but there's just moments between Arnold
Arnold
and
was
Amelia,
great,
like they were really
yeah.
nice.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. People bug me so much. Fans, trolls, whatever, bug me so much. Even people that generally like movies that I like bug me because they go into this thing and critics are guilty of this too. They'll pick apart a movie like Age of Ultron or Terminator. They'll get down to the fine nitty-gritty details of, oh, well, this is a plot hole. This is this. This character's motivation is crap. Do you not realize that you're paying to go see the novelty of something? Like, for Terminator, you're going to see Arnold Schwarzenegger on the big screen again as a Terminator.
Yeah.
That should warrant the price of a ticket enough because he originated the role.
Yeah.
Same with Age of Ultron. You're going to see a popcorn flick. You're going to see these fantastical comic book heroes battle each other.
Yeah.
Go to movies to have fun, to escape into the world of movies.
It's interesting because
that's why I enjoy them.
It's the equivalent
of
like if every sports fan went into a stadium and was like, well, the point guard was good, but the center was crap, so the whole thing was terrible.
Right.
You know, going into a sporting
event, this basketball game was just like every other fucking basketball game I've seen.
Nobody holds that entertainment to that echelon.
Right.
So.
No.
Okay, perfect example of this. I saw The Walk over the weekend.
Nice.
Didn't really like it.
IMAX 3D.
There was
or
a
no?
lot of it. Yeah, IMAX 3D.
Okay.
There was a lot of it that I was just like watching, and I'm just like, this is weird. This is totally inconsistent. Like, I had all these issues with it. But when you get to the moment where he's standing on top of the World Trade Center and walks out onto that wire, you are riveted until the moment he steps off. Like, it's seeing just for that moment. Doesn't matter if the first two-thirds of the movie are inconsistent and incoherent most of the time, that 30-minute or so walk sequence is worth it.
Which is...
We've, We've been so over-spectacalized that we take for granted our spectacles. Because, like...
As I do.
Yeah. Avengers is impossible, like, even 15 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not to get, like, religious, but it's the faith of a child.
Yeah.
Like, a kid doesn't go, well, like, oh, I thought Black Widow's motivation was a little muddled. Like, it's just like, oh, my God, they're all there. Yeah. It's really happening.
Yeah.
So I wonder how, like, all of this perspective is going to affect something like Star Wars, because that's the most anticipated thing ever. But I think they're very deliberately going to give us something that's not overwrought or epic, but this is just like, no, this is an adventure. This is a 2-hour adventure in the same way that the originals were. But I don't know if this culture will be okay with that.
Well, what helps with Star Wars, I think, that so many other things have struggled with, and sort of there are certain things with the novelty where the novelty becomes, it's not novel anymore.
Right, right.
You know, after the 500th city is destroyed, you know, it's sort of like, okay, let's try to come up with something else. Like, do you need to crash the Enterprise into San Francisco? Is that something that needed to be done?
Yeah.
You know, with Age of Ultron, at least, that was the story. It wasn't we're going to destroy this city. It's, look, this city is just a giant fucking rock that's going to drop and destroy everything. But with Star Wars, you don't really have giant cities to destroy. No. Like, the movies have never been about that.
No.
It's these big battles, but, you know, the biggest thing you have destroyed, well, I guess a Death Star is pretty big. But it's not about destroying, okay, and I guess Alderaan's destroyed. Okay, my point's moved. but it's not about destroying a city. It's not about to save this city. It's about, it's a different thing.
And the difference is when Alderaan gets blown up, that's all of 5 seconds in that movie. You don't spend 45 minutes in the city streets watching two
CGI. Right, it's not like Independence Day, where like the Death Star laser comes down the middle and then the White House explodes out in a circle around the entire planet.
That's kind of what I mean, though, is that if Force Awakens lacks the traditional structure that we're used to now, which is like 10 minutes action sequence, 10 minutes action sequence, giant action sequence at the end. If it's just like an adventure and at the end your biggest action sequence is a lightsaber duel in the woods, our general audience is going to ride with that.
I'm going to say yes, just because... especially if it's a lightsaber duel, because I don't know a single person who doesn't think that every single one of those scenes in all six of the movies, regardless of how you feel about the prequels, every single lightsaber battle was exciting.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That is just I'm totally on board for whatever.
No, I know you are. No, I know you are, but I totally see what you're saying. Yeah. Is there going to be enough spectacle in this to wow the audience? Although I think... I don't like to put things on a pedestal in this way, but I think Star Wars is a different animal. And just in the sense that even as much as people dislike the prequels, all these morons will still watch
Potter
them again.
Can't even hear the word prequels without cracking up.
So the thing about, if you think about A New Hope, for instance, it starts with that brief space battle and the stuff on the Tantive IV. So there's your first action sequence right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Then you go through all the stuff on Tatooine. You go into the cantina. You have that sort of mini action sequence, kind of, where you escape from it, but it's really just more about tension there than it is about action.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Millennium Falcon's captured, and it's not until they get to the detention block that there's another action sequence.
Right.
It's true.
You know, and then that goes through their escape, and then there's the big space battle at the end. There's only really like three or four action sequences in that
thing. And it's all story and it's all journey, which is why it's great. And I think that's what we're going to get. But what I'm wondering is if today's audiences are up for story and journey, or if they just want 10 minutes action sequence, 10 minutes action sequence, world building.
I think if it's finale. I think if it's strong enough, it'll be just fine. Like, I think it's Star Wars has always... The strength of Star Wars is definitely not the special effects. Special effects are awesome. They're so fun. Everybody knows, especially those originals with all the models. I mean, it's so fun to watch. The sound in Star Wars is second to none. But what it survives on is the storytelling and the fact that they just drop you into a world where they don't have to explain anything. Right. I've always loved that about George. Yeah. George's stories. He doesn't explain any of his science. He just says those are power couplings that cause this to do this. That's a crystal that causes that laser. I love that. Right. They don't have to live by the physics of our world. So you can completely escape into Star Wars, and that's what makes that world so magical. And I think I think JJ is going to bring that back. At least it feels that way. With the trailers. Like, the trailer for Episode 1 was exciting. Everybody loved that Episode 1 trailer.
That's still my favorite trailer.
I still like Episode 1 for what it is.
So do I. But it felt like something new, though. It was exciting, but it felt like something new.
Right.
Whereas when you watch this one, it feels new, but it also...
It feels like going back home.
Yeah. There's a nostalgia.
Which is when Harrison Ford's... Right. That trailer was amazing.
I cried a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, but that's the thing. And I think that's what will... It's... Given that it's Star Wars and that it's characters we know, that will make it easier for people who are expecting 10 minutes action, 10 minutes action, 10 minutes action. It'll make it easier for them to swallow because it is these characters. And there are things that are going to be exciting just about seeing Han Solo.
Right.
Just about seeing Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, R2-D2, C-3PO, seeing all of these people again for the first time in 30 plus
years. Maybe we should see it twice back to back, because I think the first time I watch it, I'm just going to be crying.
Well, you think uncontrollably?
I'm also going to be upset because I know everybody's going to scream and whoop and yell for every single thing that pops up on the screen. And to me,
but that's great for when the letters come out.
That is okay. Yeah, but we don't need to cheer every time R2 comes on the screen. Every time 3PO comes on the screen.
Here's the thing, though. Not every time. First of all, the first time. You treat it like Seinfeld. The first time Kramer comes through the door, you cheer.
Shut up. Right.
But here's the thing.
But they took that away from Seinfeld, you know that, right? Because it throws off the timing of the comedy. If you look at Seinfeld,
but that's okay.
They took that away after that season. They told the audience not to do that.
But here's the thing. I bet you Abrams, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if Abrams is...
Let those moments breathe a little bit?
Yeah, because it seems like it wouldn't surprise me if the first time you see Luke Skywalker is that shot we see in the trailer where he puts his hand on R2-D2 and looks up. And there's no dialogue there. There's no talking there. Like, I think the first time we see these characters, you're going to be able to do that and not miss anything.
Yeah.
Like, I hope Abrams understands how big that moment is, not just for the audience the first time, but for you seeing these characters as almost completely new people.
What I love is
30 years later in world time.
I love the reverence that's being made with where you read the story about the first time that Harrison Ford walked on the set as Han Solo, and Kathleen Kennedy said she was there at Video Village behind the monitor, and she said you could hear a pin drop, and she looked behind her, and the whole crew had amassed behind, like, everybody from, like, Crafty that, like, had come up to, like,
to see
that moment, but they're all silent as church, you know? Yeah.
I believe.
So that. If that's the mood on set, I'm sure JJ is letting moments take a little pause.
Based on his other films, I think that'll be fine. I think he knows what he's doing, and I think even though he's kind of the newer school of movie making and cinematography, in a lot of ways he's also carried on the traditions and the what's the word I'm looking for? The traditions and the examples and the styles of the older guys like Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. That's why I loved Super 8.
Super 8 was a great movie, and it was like all of
Steven Spielberg's older movies combined into one. Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah. So I have every bit of faith in Abrams. I think, and that's another thing about George too. You're talking about story and picture and no dialogue and just letting things breathe. That is one thing that George Lucas is very good at, too. He's always said in interviews and everything, because I've been watching a lot of behind-the-scenes special features from the saga, and he consistently says that I am a visual storyteller. I look at this as a visual medium, which is what it is. It developed from photography and became this moving picture that we all know and love. So
George could probably do away with dialogue completely, just go to those little cards on the side of the movies.
Minox. For all of George's I talk like I know him personally, but
come on, he's Papa George.
He is. For all of his neuroses, which all of us have our own,
Yeah.
For all of the crap and the flack he gets for retweaking things, he is an artist and a craftsman, and he crafts his movies. He doesn't just write a story, film it, and cut it, and then, you know, vomit it up on the screen. Yeah. He crafts his movies. And everybody, again, can say what they want about the prequels. I enjoy them. So I did not enjoy certain things about them.
Agreed.
But
agreed.
I appreciate them, and I respect them. And
they're canon.
They are canon.
Absolutely.
And listening to him talk about it and seeing him involved in every single bit of the movie-making process with all of those and crafting the film and taking all the little bits from this scene and putting them here and putting them there and really shuffling it around so we get the best story possible, I think that's great. And he has the time and money to do it. So at the end of the day, I think it's just jealousy on other filmmakers' parts that they can't do what George does.
Maybe this is my desire to be a filmmaker and my selfishness, but I believe those are George's movies. Make no mistake about it. They belong to him. They don't belong to you. He's sharing it with us. That's all filmmakers. If you don't like what they do, don't watch it. But he can tweak it all he wants. The thing about it, though, is I'm more of a fan of the prequels than I am of the special editions of the original trilogy. I didn't like the alterations he made in that movie. However, he can do what the hell he wants. I just hope when I get to that point in my career that they will let me do what the hell I want. Because when they don't, that's when you get stuff like Fantastic Four.
Oh.
So
I think
there's that.
I think
when you let the people that you hired do their thing, you get Guardians of the Galaxy. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah, but you also get Pan.
Yeah. Really? I think I'm sure there was some interference in that one too.
I don't know. Everything they've said is that they got along really well.
Because WB is not actually very much a Metal studio. And I'm not just saying that because we're sitting on their property.
I'm sure everybody involved in there thought they were making the Fantastic Pan movie. I mean,
everybody does. Everybody who makes a movie, nobody sets out to make a bad movie.
No, of course not.
No,
of course not. But
I think we can all rest easy about Force Awakens because J.J. Abrams wrote Gone Fishing. And if the saga is put in the hands of the man that gave us the Joe Pesci, Danny Glover epic we all wanted, then we can all be at peace.
So Awakens.
We all have to start somewhere. Come on, man.
I just hope Han Solo doesn't walk in there and not have any memories.
Yeah.
That was a regarding Henry reference.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess these gentlemen are correct. Sometimes when you let an auteur do his thing, he or she turns in crap. But at the same time, it's kind of like when you have a quarterback like Brett Favre or
Dick Picks.
Are we talking about? Yes, I'm talking about Dick Picks.
He's a visual storyteller.
Yeah, he is. That's his material. And you don't have to watch it.
Wait,
you were making a point.
No, well, my point is this. My basic point is this: is like a quarterback like that, or an auteur like some directors out there. High risk, high reward.
Yeah,
you know, like they're either gonna throw four touchdowns or they're gonna throw four pick sixes.
Kevin Smith is a gunslinger. You get Clerks or you get Cop Out, which I still enjoy.
Cop Out was fun.
Yeah, but nobody else did.
Yeah. But to be fair, he didn't write that.
Yes, right, he didn't. Right. But but Kev's has some missteps. But most of the part, like the thing about Kev though, is he makes movies he'd want to see, and luckily his fans agree with him. So that's why he's got a career. So more power to him.
Yes.
All due respect to Kevin Smith, we all love him here. My first email was kevinsmithwannabe@aol.com. So
nice.
There you go.
Not bad.
Anyway, moving on really quick, because we did a lot of movie stuff there. We'll just go through quickly through a few more things. Is there any... TV is back.
Yes, TV is back. So I'm excited to talk about television.
Back with a force.
Kyle, we'll do this. What's your favorite new show so far, and what's your favorite returning show so far?
I have not watched a lot of new shows, so I'm not going to be helpful there. And I have too many returning shows that I love. But there are two things that I want to talk about really quick.
Okay.
When it comes to television. And if nobody else has seen them, then I'll just shut up.
I wonder if you're going
to... First is Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Fear the Walking Dead. Did anybody watch...
I gave up on Walking Dead like 2 years ago.
I could care less about anything. I will speak to you here in a second about that. Finish your thought on Walking Dead, and then I have a thing to say.
The premiere was good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the plan was good, but the premiere was really good, and it was interesting because it was told. There was sort of the now story, which they keep cutting back to. And then there's the sort of aftermath of the finale, which is all shot in black and white. Oh. And there's sort of a lot of, there's a lot of pieces of that that just have no dialogue. That's just characters sort of reacting or looking at each other, or you can see them contemplating. Like, they're taking a little bit of risk.
That's so weird, because Frank Darabont, before he got booted, wanted to do like a black and white premiere. And they're like, are you fucking crazy?
This is also six seasons deep. Extremely popular show.
Like, there were some bad seasons of this show, and it only got more popular. So now it seems like they're finally, with Scott Gimple running it and sort of having righted the ship and made the characters interesting and given them, like, full characters as opposed to just these archetypes that are walking around being, you know, generic. Now it seems like they're like, look, people are going to watch no matter what we do, so let's take some risks. Let's try some stuff. That's good. So there's that. That was the one thing I want to talk about. Do you have any thoughts on Walking Dead?
Well, all I was going to say is, like Josh on my left, this Josh, me pointing to me, I gave... that was a lot of useless circular statements.
That's your material. Woo! Yeah,
The reason I call you Potter.
I gave up on The Walking Dead for a little bit of time too, and I loved the first season a lot. I think the first season is still one of the strongest seasons, and I didn't think you could get any better than that. But the fifth season was really good.
Yes, it was.
And was that last season?
Last season, yeah. And I stopped watching it faithfully somewhere. I would say tail end of season three into season four, because it just lost my interest. It seemed like it was a lot of wandering, a lot of useless.
Yeah, they spent that whole year on the farm.
Yeah,
and I was okay with some of that, but then even so, they got onto the whole like just wandering around the forest sort of thing, and I'm just not into that.
Yeah,
it works for things like Lord of the Rings, where they're on a quest and they're wandering somewhere. And they're trekking and they're you know doing all of that, but. But yeah, I lost interest too, and it seemed like they were just doing the same thing every episode or two episodes. But now that they added everything back on Netflix, or it's up through the end of season five, I was like, all right, well, sixth season's getting some good buzz, fifth season got some pretty good buzz. All right, I'll spend some time and I'll pick up where I kind of left off or a little bit before that. Watch it all the way through. It got really good again.
Yeah.
A lot better. Once they get through, and again, spoilers, but once they get through the whole blowing up of the prison and that part, there are some weak episodes in there, but that quickly leads into a much
Terminus,
better story.
Alexandria.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff's good.
Yeah. So, all of the Terminus and Alexandria plot lines are spot on. And you're right. The season five... end the cliffhanger and everything was great, and it just leaves you really uneasy, because it almost, the characters you thought you knew are completely different by the end of that episode. Everybody has gone from where you thought they were through a complete change in a way, and they have different motives and different thoughts on life during the zombie apocalypse, and it's pretty well done. I gotta say I am going to watch it again now.
Yes. Okay, so the other show I wanted to talk about really quick, and I'm guessing Dan's watched this. I don't know about...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I fell asleep during that whole Fear the Walking
Dead. That's okay. We didn't talk about Fear the Walking
Dead. No, we don't need to talk about
that.
Fear
the Walking Dead. That was interesting. What's that?
No, that's the spinoff set in Los Angeles.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
During the collapse.
Beginning.
Yeah.
It's like 2 months before the beginning of
Walking Dead. I'm a huge Walking Dead fan, as you guys can...
No, but I want to talk about the premiere of The Flash.
I haven't watched it yet, but I will.
Speaking my language.
I need to catch up.
Well, you're wearing the shirt.
Yeah, so for those of you who can't see us through, you know, this magic radio,
which is
radio
anybody
box.
Not sitting here in this room.
Yes, exactly. I wear a Flash t-shirt.
Yes.
But yes. Okay, let's talk about The Flash, because I love me some Barry Allen.
I don't know. How careful do we have to be, Joshua?
I'm going to watch it regardless, so whatever. It doesn't matter.
I liked it a lot. And the end was great. It was... You know,
okay. I'll try to
spoiler, as somebody that hasn't like caught up yet.
watched any of them.
Is he? Is he still fast? Is he still? He's
lost a step or two. Think the Danian Tomlinson in a Jets uniform. Yeah.
Still getting still putting some points up. Barry, he's a good flex play.
Barry is still fast, and as his story continues, he will probably become even faster and faster as the show goes on. And if they go to his ultimate end, he will become one with the Speed Force and disappear. Yeah. And die, and then Wally West will take
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan, yes.
I really do, I think I've said this on previous pods, but I really do want to watch it. You do. It's all season one is on fun. Netflix now, and season two is recording now, so.
Okay, you'll catch up.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I also love Arrow, too, and I'm very much looking forward to Supergirl because it's Greg Berlanti who seems to know what he's doing. And Gotham looks like it's going to be fun this year, so...
apparently, Pee Wee Herman's playing Penguin's dad.
Oh,
yeah.
Paul Rubens, not Pee Wee Herman.
So you guys remember? Right.
He's not going to come in and be score, like, "You're the Penguin. I know you are, but what am I?" it's not going to be that.
You know you are. They wanted him. Burton wanted him for I don't know if it was a Penguin, but he definitely wanted him for a character in that series.
Oh, interesting.
But at that time, he was going through that stuff with the whole, the masturbation in the porn theater, and still don't understand why that's a bad thing. If you go to a porn theater and you get caught masturbating, never mind. That's a different subject for a different podcast. But anyway, what were the cops doing there in general?
I don't know. That's what everyone's there to see. Let's be honest.
Exactly. Wait, the masturbating or the
sorry,
porn?
Fred Willard. Yes, it's the same
thing. Well, if it is Paul Rubens, I'm there to see Pee Wee.
I want
to
see Pee Wee's Herman.
Yeah.
Or Herman's Pee Wee.
I think originally Paul Rubens, if there was going to be a third Burton Batman, which he planned on doing it.
Yeah.
I think they wanted him for the Riddler.
Okay. Interesting. I could see that.
That would
as I was about to point out, and Josh totally remembers this, he does play Penguin's dad in the Burton series.
Yeah. When they put the baby penguin, because he comes out with fins and shit, and they throw him down the river. The dad that puts him down the river is Paul Rubens.
I did not remember that.
He gets to be Penguin's dad again.
Yeah.
And I hope that Lawrence Fishburne gets to play their mailman.
And then, his name is Mailman Cody.
Yes.
Wasn't he the cowboy?
Yeah, Cowboy
Cody.
That's
right.
Cowboy Cody.
Okay. It's the mailman. Funny.
But still, Mailman Cody. That's
Karl Malone was the mailman. Yeah. I get it all.
Karl Malone. I'm Karl Malone.
And okay, one more TV thing I want to say. We won't go into it this week because Dan and I will definitely want to talk about this in a couple weeks after we've done something very specific that I'm not going to talk about quite yet.
Yeah.
Secrets. Undateable.
Oh my God.
Undateable.
Yes, Mr. Bowen has introduced me to this show. It's a show that I've actually always wanted to watch because I think Chris D'Elia is one of the funniest people on the planet. And if you guys haven't seen his stand-up, go to Netflix right now and watch it. We'll wait. Anyway.
How great is that?
But yeah, how awesome was that, folks? Chris D'Elia
is hilarious. He does great space work.
So fantastic. And this sitcom, and Kyle said to me, he's like, you will laugh. He said, if Ron Funches doesn't do something that makes you smile within the first 5 minutes, you're not going to like this show. Or his first joke.
Just anytime Ron Funches talks, if you don't either laugh or smile or just love him, you're dead.
Ron Funches literally, and they made a joke about this in an episode I just saw, but Ron Funches literally is Winnie the Pooh. Like, he is a big... adult Winnie the Pooh. He is adorable
and a little dirty sometimes.
Very dirty sometimes. Yeah. The man has had a lot of conquests, and it's a very fun show. But
it's live now. This season they're doing live tapings on Friday. They're doing, I don't know if they're doing it every episode. I think so, if I read it right. But for the premiere, at least, they recorded separate East and West Coast.
Yeah, they do that for every. It's going to be every week.
It's interesting because I watched the West Coast feed at home. And once I found out that they did separate feeds, I went and watched it again on Hulu because Hulu had the East Coast feed.
Yeah.
And watching it, it is different. Like, in the East Coast feed, there's a point – in the West Coast feed, I should say. There's a point near the end of the episode, in, like, the last act, where three of the characters are sitting at a thing and Chris D'Elia is like, Brent's late. And they're just sitting there, like, ad-libbing for, like, a minute and a half. Because one of the characters supposed to be there is just not there.
Yeah.
By the way, he said actor's name.
Yes, that's the actor's name. Sorry, you're right. That's the actor's name. And so after about a minute and a half, they then cut to the next sort of piece of that scene, which happens at the table behind them. So then I watched the East Coast version, and the scene ran more or less normally. So I got to see what that scene was supposed to be, and it was awesome.
I would say, having worked on like sitcoms before, that the East Coast feed might be more enjoyable, because the way that has to function is that the first taping would be like almost the run through, and then the second taping, except for what you just said, things would be ironed out. So you get more of the live element. I feel like.
It felt like they were much looser, because there's one point in the West Coast airing where like somebody's like, and when I was homeless, and the other character's just sitting there laughing. And she's like, do you think me being homeless is funny? And he's like, no
they'd be looser in the second one, like, but they'd be more mistake prone in the first one. I've also heard that they're all like, that basically those tapings are like a party, which is great.
Yeah, I am convinced that like one of the showrunner or a producer or something was like, look, Brent, when we come back to this act, just be in the bathroom. Just to see what happens. We'll just let him go.
Yeah.
Like, I am it's convinced good television. That's what happened.
It makes eyeballs come in. Also, not to get too inside Hollywood, but me and Ron Funches have both seen too much of each other's bodies because we're at the gym at the same time.
Note to self. Go to the gym.
Wow. Note to self. Get the image of Ron Funches and Josh Moorhead out of my head.
Yep. Okay, so that's... I just wanted to mention Undateable because more people need to watch it. And
I agree. This show needs to be a bigger hit because I don't want it to go away. And for you Disney fans... who are growing up, a girl from the Disney show, Jessie? No, what was the name of her show? Anyway, one of the Disney girls.
I didn't see her show.
Hey, oh, Jessie. Good Luck
but
Charlie.
She is delightful.
Good Luck Charlie was the name of her show. Mm-hmm. Her name is Bridget Medler. Talented girl. She's hilarious. She's a very cute girl, and she can sing. She's now a part of the show, and she is a definitely welcome addition. And Undateable is definitely one of the best sitcoms out there, let alone a standard sitcom.
It is by far the best multicam sitcom I've seen.
It's good.
Like
it's
the very, first very, couple seasons very, of How I Met Your Mother.
Funny. Very, very funny.
Before we wrap things up or get off of TV, I just have to say that I would say the single most important nerd show on TV right now, and one of the best shows, period, but like for a nerd, it's requirement. It's 101 TV, Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty is pretty fantastic.
Rick and Morty.
That's a cartoon, right?
Yeah, it's so...
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
There's so many... Like, because I had people tell me for like a year, year and a half, like, you gotta watch Rick and Morty. I was like, okay, I want to watch the news. Like, I was like, I don't know. Like, it feels like homework when somebody tells you
you
have to watch something.
To your grandpa?
Yeah. But I finally...
He's like, look, Josh, you gotta watch Rick and Morty.
Yeah. But I finally watched it, and it's so smart. And on like multiple levels, like science and like story tropes, and it's so emotional too. Like it does great story work, and it's just insanely hilarious. Wait, it's a must watch.
Maybe I missed it. What's the premise? You haven't set it up
before
me a little bit.
Is like a mad scientist, and he's
a deranged version, from my understanding, of Doc Brown and Marty McFly.
Yes.
Like
Rick and Morty.
Rick is a crazy scientist, and Morty is his grandson, and they have a dysfunctional family. And so, Rick will always be like, well, let's just get out of here. And they like jump in some machine that does a crazy thing. They go do insane
They drive
stuff.
88 miles an hour.
They do insane things. But every episode is like crazier and funnier than the last, but also like without like putting a neat bow on it. Like the moral of the story is like it communicates through all the comedy and science and insanity what the theme it's trying to get to you.
Now that's Dan Harmon, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the creator of Community.
And a very nice gentleman.
That's what I understand. So obviously Chevy Chase is the asshole that we all thought he was.
Well,
if you can't get along with Dan Harmon, apparently there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But at the same time, Chevy Chase has always been known to be difficult, and why anybody was surprised that he did this, since he was the one who tried to start a fire. Fist fight with Bill Murray, as far as I know, even though their scene in Caddyshack is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Completely ad-lib, by the way. In case anybody doesn't know that, that scene in Caddyshack was not in the script. They had Bill Murray was hanging out. No, Chevy Chase was hanging out on set that day. They realized, hey, we don't have these guys in a scene together. They put them together and they just said, do your fucking thing. And that's what we got. But they hate each other. Anyway, we'll close out. We'll close out on the TV segment with Potter. If you have any final thoughts on TV, I mean, you gave us some of your Walking Dead thoughts. So.
I mean, I'm excited to start watching The Flash again. I'm behind on that. I've just been behind in general on my TV. Supernatural is a favorite of mine.
11 seasons
still on.
I know, right? It's crazy. Right. And
love me some Winchester, boys.
It had its weak seasons, but it's kind of come back, I would say. Because it really, Kripke designed it to be a 5-season thing, and he ties it up in 5 seasons. And the way they brought it back for a 6th season was cool, but then there's some stuff in there that kind of lags and stuff. But last season was pretty good, consistently better. This season looks to be pretty good too. And then of course Doctor Who, because all of us should be Doctor Who fans. But
Doctor Who.
What? I'm only 2 episodes behind, but I did see the premiere and I liked it.
I'm a bad movie.
Yeah, I've seen the premiere. That's as far as I've gotten.
I liked it. I'm a big fan of Capaldi. He's doing a good job. He's definitely a different doctor than we've experienced so far.
Yeah.
One thing we all didn't mention that I know we all agree on is that the new Muppets is...
Yes!
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't believe none of us said that when we said the best new show out there. It's by far the Muppets. I know a lot of shows I get in, like Quantico, I really want to see. I heard it's doing pretty well. I love the multi-racial cast and that, and the fact that they're pumping an Indian girl as the lead, and that and she's all over the place. She's gorgeous, by the way.
Yeah.
That's still awesome. The things are... not completely changing, but they're slowly changing. Mm-hmm. But the Muppets, I can't say enough. I've watched both of those episodes at least 3 times. Or 3 episodes. Are there 3 episodes now?
I think we're 3 episodes, yeah.
I haven't seen the third one yet. When's the third
one?
No,
you did.
I did?
It's the Fozzie Goes to Big Bear.
That was the third one? Okay, so I've seen all 3 episodes multiple times. And, oh my God, that show is...
Yeah.
It's so wonderful. Like, I can't even... I can't say enough good things about it. Like, Jim Henson... he probably wishes he could come back to life right now because he wants to be a part of this because this feels like Jim. His fingerprints are all over this.
It's like the best new old show that you have right now. That's really what it is. Yeah.
You combine the best thing of like 30 Rock and The Office and all these shows that are behind the scenes things of business or working environment and everything, and you put the Muppets in that environment.
The craziest thing is, and you never see a TV show do this, is that from its pilot, it felt, dropping in on the pilot, it felt like you were watching episode 4 of season 5.
Yeah.
Like it was already firing on all cylinders.
Yeah. Because you're so familiar with these characters, and they've kept the spirit of every single character pretty perfectly. I mean, Gonzo's weird, you know.
Yep.
Miss Piggy's a diva.
Yeah.
You know, Kermit's always worried. And the thing that I think is lost over the last few years with Kermit is they've made him too family friendly, because in the original show, he was really sarcastic. You know, he was really cynical, and he thought every single person that was around him was an idiot. Even though he loved them, he loved them all to death, and he was always a good frog. But he just was, I'm surrounded by idiots, you know. And that's kind of brought this back. Like even just in the opening sequences, the title. And when all the Muppets are running through and stealing all the food and all the, and it's just really, it's like time lapse, and it's just Kermit right at the end by himself. Time to get things started.
Yeah.
And it's such a good moment. It's like, oh, you know, and obviously if people remember the original Muppet Show, it's time to get things started. That's the way it started. So, but anyway, yes, The Muppets is a fantastic show and the best new show on TV right now. So I think we're getting pretty close on time, but as you got a feel of what it's going to be, it's kind of a loose podcast we have here. We don't really have a format per se. We just like to sit around and talk nerdy stuff the way any of you would in your house with your buddies, you know, and you know, just shoot the shit and talk about fun stuff. Next time we'll talk about, we'll bring up some more video game stuff, some comic book stuff. I'm going to be introducing a segment that I don't have a name for yet, but where one of us will tell a story from our past, a really great nerd moment, like the time I took my Mexican grandfather, who doesn't speak a word of English, to Return of the Jedi. You guys will love this story. It's really fun. He fell asleep during the entire damn movie. but he still took me because he was a great man. But anyway, that's episode 1. Kyle, you have any final thoughts?
No, I'm good.
Morehead?
No, I would say that we'll probably have more form and segment. We'll find ourselves. Yeah,
we will. We will.
This is
a
journey.
Yes, we will. This is the Eat Scholar podcast.
Yeah,
exactly. Except it's eat, and eat.
What's
we're not a girl, eating. Not yet a woman, but yeah. We're gonna get there. Yes,
we're gonna get there. And the fun
we're
thing
gonna
is,
blossom
is you're gonna be on this journey with us. Hopefully, all you listening will keep listening to us. Mr. Potter, what about you? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I don't want to do any self-discovery with Josh.
Well, I'll be with Ron at the gym then. Yes.
And I'm sure if Mr. Funches ever listens to this, he's going to be looking for a tall-headed blonde kid.
With he sparkling, sees me.
Sparkling blue him. Eyes.
Oh, sparkling.
They lock eyes.
And oddly enough, in a place full of sweat, he's still going to stick out.
Yep.
So anyway, that's all we got for this time, and hopefully we'll see you next time. And also, I'd like to mention celebrity guests, but that's a little bit farther down the road. But we're going to have some fun stuff for you. That you guys got to pay attention. Keep coming back, because the way we nerd is the way we nerd. Good night.